Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Film Hustlers. We have a very special show today about the strike. We're into 102 days of the writer's strike and the Screen Actors Guild as well. Hollywood is in support of the writers getting a fair deal, and we're going to be talking with Peter Marietta, who is one of our finest writers, and he's taking some time out of supporting his union to talk to us a little bit about what's going on. So I hope you guys enjoy the show.
Film Hustlers.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Film Hustlers. We're here with Peter Marietta. Now, Peter Marietta is a very good friend. We've worked together. He's done, I'm going to rattle off a few of my favorite shows: Cristela, George Lopez, Greetings from Tucson, Feliz Navidad, Mr. Iglesias. And you worked a lot with Mario Lopez, who we're friends with. And what have you done lately? Just tell people what you've been up to.
Right now, there's a show called Primo that's on Amazon Freebie. Came out in May. And I was an executive producer on that. And that's it. That's what cool. I've been up to.
Interesting show, because I'm not really here to talk about your careers. Because sure. Your career is clearly, you know, we talked about it on the last show. Everyone knows what you've done. You've done amazing work. But we're into 100 days on a strike or more.
101.
Plus, yeah. And it's scary. You know, it's a scary time.
Yeah.
Screen Actors Guild's on strike. The Writers Guild's on strike. Everyone is supporting. Producers Guild is supporting. Directors Guild is supporting. Everyone's supporting the strike. You know, people are coming out. And it's scary on a lot of levels. And I was thinking this morning, you know, a lot of us love each other. You know, we really care about each other. And we care about each other's lives and personal families and our futures. You know, I mean, we root for each other, whether you're a producer, writer, actor, whatever it is. And it's concerning to me on a certain level, because it feels ugly on some levels.
No, there's lots of hurt feeling all around.
Entertainment's not going away. Like, this is, we are going to solve something, but where are we going to be when it's all done?
Yeah, that's well said. I think we're definitely in a place where I say the same things to myself when I get up in the morning and head out to picket. You know, this is going to be over. When it's over, how are we going to be with each other? And it's difficult. It's difficult. And I would say, you know, I want to just say right away that I'm not on the negotiating committee. I'm not on the board. In the last strike, I was on a committee. I was in the negotiating committee in 2020. But I'm not in the room right now having those conversations. So I'm just out trying to help, doing my part. And yeah, there's a knot in my stomach for the last couple of weeks. It's been pretty good up till that point, but I do feel it. I feel the lack of progress from the AMPTP side. You know, I think it's always interesting to me that, you know, friends or neighbors will be like, when are you guys going back to talk? And I'm like, we're ready. We know exactly where the building is. They just need to call up and tell us to be there. And so I'm not sure. I mean, when I hear people talk in our union, our leaders, when David Goodman says that, you know, I think that they were very unprepared for the actors to go out. And so it's going to take them a few weeks internally to have their own conversations about like what is their strategy to end this? So, you know, I'm hopeful that soon they will have their ducks in a row and come back and say, let's sit down. You know, I was hoping that was Friday, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So apparently that did not go well.
No.
Yeah. Clearly, if, you know, if someone's selling product that you created, that you were part of, you should be getting paid. If, you know, as the industry changes from corporate America, from the corporate side, as they continue to sell memberships or however they're going to do it, and they get millions and millions of people signing up to their site for $15 or $19 or $20, whatever it is, they have to figure out how to spread that wealth, right? Because if it's because of you that they're getting it, then they've got to figure out how to share that. So that's clear. But another thing that I think has been up for conversation is the concept that corporate America deals with their companies in different ways, right? So you hire your CEO because you want your shareholders to make money, right? You want at the end of every quarter or at the end of the year to be your shareholders to be putting money in their pocket. Now, all of these companies want, they want that to happen. That's why they hire the Bob Igers of the world.
Sure.
So a lot of people have been criticizing CEOs and saying like, well, they're making $40 million or $50 million or 100, whatever.
239.
Is that what it is?
Zaslav, I think.
Holy mackerel.
You have to fact check that.
All right. So whatever that amount is, it is a lot of money, but is it the fault of the CEO that's being hired and given that deal? Or is it the fault of the corporations? Or do you think the CEOs should be saying like, look, don't pay me this much because it's going to hurt, you know, the product? Like, how much are the CEOs really responsible?
I guess it's a good question. And I'm going to give you like two or three different answers. Like, one of the answers I give you is, and I don't know, I can't, you would have to do some fact checking once we're done with the interview. But I know that I've read in the newspaper in the last 10 years about a company in trouble that hires a new CEO, and the new CEO comes in and says, I'm only taking a dollar in salary because this company's a mess and needs to be fixed. You know, I'm not for sure, but maybe Papa John's Pizza was in trouble and maybe they made a move, or I don't know which company, but I know more than once I've heard that said. We're in some trouble here. I'm already a pretty wealthy individual. I'm going to take a dollar in salary as proof that I'm here to fix this. Okay. So that exists in the world as a possibility. I'm not saying any of these guys are going to do it, but it exists. I would also say that when you think about what they're paid, is it their fault that they were getting it? Just like, is it Trevor Bauer's fault that he got the highest per year contract of a baseball player? Is it his fault? Maybe not. But if you're in charge of managing the whole operation, I would have thought there would be people around the people that had these speeches a few weeks ago that would have said, hey, boss, I don't know that I'd talk about that right that way. Or I don't know. There's an entire infrastructure around a CEO, communication teams. Like, it's an easy thing to say, hey, let's, you know, do this. When Ted Sarandos a couple weeks ago said he grew up in a union house, his dad was an electrician, and I know that probably the intention there was, hey, I get it. But then if you say, well, as a union person, you're like, well, then almost that makes it worse, because you think to yourself, well, then you should know better than what you've been doing. It's easier if you say, I've never experienced a union before this, even if that's not true. So it's very interesting to me to watch the way the communication's coming out. And so ultimately, I guess, it's their shop. They've got to figure out how to manage it. So, you know, that's what I think.
Yeah, I think it's complicated. And I think I have knowledge of CEOs coming into companies and moving money to the bottom line so that they can get big bonuses. I know that.
Yep.
I know it happens,
yep.
You know, which takes away money from the areas where it should be. And it could be helping networks, and it could be helping studios.
Well, I think
studios.
A good example of that, just in the abstract, you know, Discovery buying Warner Brothers was a somewhat smaller company using leverage and borrowed money, I believe, to buy a bigger company. And along with that came the first day of knowing that was exactly what you just said, right?
I mean, yeah.
There was going to have to be some bottom line and some charge-offs and some redundancies, yeah. And all that stuff is going to go down, right? Yeah.
And it's tough. For the producer standpoint, you look at like, when you look at a movie and you look at DGA and you look at WGA and you look at actors, you know, actors, there's a big pool of them, right? You've got like 30 of them on a movie, and then you got one writer or two writers or three writers, and then you got one director.
Yep.
Right. So those guilds are very
so much smaller. Yeah.
Smaller, you know. And then you got a big actor pool. And actors, you know, when you really get a look at residuals on actors, or you get a look at individual actors, it's not a lot of money to be made. You know, it's a very
correct.
You know, it's not unless you're Brad Pitt, you're struggling to make a living.
Yes.
And I suppose writers to a certain extent are in that same boat, because you have basic cable, you have lower budgeted films, which take up the majority of the movies now, I guess. And then you have Network, which is not doing that much stuff, right?
No.
Where people used to become millionaires and do extremely well, I suppose. And then you have studio films, which there's not a lot of anymore.
Correct.
So what this is all about is about fairness and about dealing with the cost of living and about being able to feed your families and about being able to live in Los Angeles where most of the work is, or New York or Chicago, right, where you just can't live anymore.
Yes.
So I think it's just an interesting time because it feels scary to me to see, you know, I don't know, I guess 10 years ago I looked at a strike and I didn't see as many of my friends out there, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's different this time. It seems very clear to the general public what's at stake. And 16 years ago, I think that part of our energy had to be explaining to people that we weren't all the people that wrote The Hangover. We were a bunch of people that wrote a bunch of stuff that we are making a living at. I don't think that that conversation has had to be as vociferous and repetitive this time. I think people get it. It's why, you know, the UPS drivers, I went to that rally, they invited us down to it. It's why the Teamsters have respected our picket lines. I think everyone kind of sees that there is this imbalance and that it's this time or it's just going to become not a career.
You know, every 3 years is a new contract.
And for us, I don't know. I think for other unions, it might be different, but for us, 3 years.
3 to 5, yeah, or something
3 years.
Like that.
3 years for us.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that over the past 15 years, I mean, look, 15 years ago, there was no Netflix as we know it today, right? We were sending our DVDs through the mail.
Yep.
Now Netflix is the biggest studio, or one of the biggest studios in the world. Amazon and Apple are companies that could take it or leave it, right? They're doing films and doing television, but it's not their main business.
No.
They're doing it because they think they should be doing
Unclear.
It.
Unclear.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting and I think it's important that we get it right and that we figure out what's happening for the next 20 years.
Yes.
And that we understand that in 3 or 4 to 5 years or even 10 years that it's not going to look like it looks now.
Correct.
And that partially the way the American dream goes is that the Netflix, the networks, the Primes, all these people are just going to keep trying to find new ways of making money. And when something doesn't work, they're going to immediately shift to something that could work. And if that does work, that's going to shift the contracts for people like yourselves.
It's going to have to,
For actors.
Yeah.
For directors. It's going to
have to. And I get that. I think we all get that. I think
we have to be ahead of it.
I think we have to be ahead of it. But I also think, and it's tough because we're on strike and we're not negotiating, but it's like, I think we want to be partners in it. I think in the strike in 07, 08, you know, we were asking to have the internet covered as part of the WGA and they didn't want to have it covered. And the logic back then was that they didn't know. The logic was, we don't know if the internet's going to be something we may want to put stuff on. And why are you so fired up about it? And the reason we were fired up about it is predates me as a writer, but the union had previously been in conversations where they'd been asked to partner on a technology called video cassettes. They were like, hey, will you partner on this? We don't know if there's any money here. So we're going to ask you to not get as much as you would in a residual of a rerun because we need to see if there's any money here. And then they never really partnered with us again, other than the initial ask of letting them financially off the hook a little bit. And when DVDs came around, same conversation erupted. And it was, you know, once again, we were told, like, we don't know. I think the original thing was the video cassettes themselves cost a lot of money to manufacture. And they didn't know if they could sell them or what it would be if it's sell through or rental, who knows. Then when DVDs came around, well, the manufacturing of those are so much cheaper. But they, we were asked again to be partners with them, and that they would promise that as the profitability would increase, they would do something about it. And they didn't. And so when it got to this internet thing, I think leaders in the guild is like, well, that's enough. Like, you've fooled us twice. Not going to do it again. And I think we had to explain, a lot of people were like, what are you doing? There's only hardly any money in this internet thing. But gosh, pretty good that we did it, because we wouldn't be covered in it now. And it's mostly how most of us make our living. So we're just saying, partner with us. It's not even like, you know, we're down for that. But I think a partnership has to include give and take, not just get, you know, take. Right? Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the crazy thing about this, is I think as we get down to the nitty gritty of this work and of these conversations, the important part of this is that corporate is always going to say, like, hey, we have no idea, we don't know what this means, we don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Somehow they're always trying to find a way to make money off of it and pay less. So as they continue to say, hey, we don't know if there's any money here.
Right. In the meantime, in that hammock, though, there was a ton of money made.
Right. And then there's no contract. And then right. When you finally get the contracts, towards the end of those agreements,
yeah, but
right?
I don't even think that we ever really got a fair shake of that. But I'm not the expert.
Yeah.
But I would say, even at the end, even as they kind of came around, whatever we did get, whatever gains we got, I don't think they were substantial, or they came at a time when that was sunsetting. I'll give you an example that's very specific to me. Right? I'm in a union, but I'm not in the union leadership, so I'll speak for myself. I was on a show, Mr. Iglesias. You and I were across the lot from each other. You were working on your show.
I came and gave you a hug a couple of times.
Yeah. And we did two seasons. You did one season, right?
I did two.
You did two? Ashley did two?
Yeah, yeah.
That's Ashley great. Was two, That's yeah. great. So we both did two seasons. We both did not do any more seasons. We were both told that we did not do well enough to do more seasons. But we were never really given the full data. That's not how they do it, right? And that's cool. That at that time is their deal. Stranger Things is a giant hit. Under the current contract, at a very low rate, much lower than if we were on a network or a cable show, I get residual payment every year that Mr. Iglesias stays on the Netflix server. I get a residual payment for all the scripts I wrote. And so does anybody that wrote in Ashley Garcia. And so does anybody that wrote in Stranger Things. And they're the same check. They're the exact same check. They might be different tiered to the budget of the show. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not the expert. But if at the end of this contract, we were able to get some transparency that allows us to see the actual success, and we got paid per it, and at the end of the day, if the Stranger Things writer gets 10 times the residual and I get 75% of what I would have gotten, if mine goes down and theirs goes up substantially now, then you've allowed me as a writer to imagine success, to try for success, to go for success. Not that I wasn't already. But you're presenting a model to your artists that say, hey, if you hit the ball out of the park, you're gonna be okay, which is what happened on network, right? I do a show for 2 years and goes away, nobody sees it, then the residual stream dries up. But if I do Law and Order and I'm on a network, the residual stream grows. And I'm like, well, great, now I consider myself a successful writer. I can buy a house and
send my kids to school. Why did that change?
Because they told us that they weren't going to give us success-oriented residuals. That was them, not us.
Really?
Yeah, that was part of the contract.
Right, because then...
Because in order to do that, they would have to share with us exactly how many viewers, exactly how often.
And that's
they'd have to share all that data.
And that's how the business was. It was like 20 million people are watching. Yes. And then when they resold it, they would say, like, we sold it for more than what we made it the first time.
Yes.
And we're all making a bunch of money.
Everybody's going to making New York. Money. Yes. Yes. We're all partners. We're all making money.
And then we're releasing the box set of all the seasons together and everyone's making a bunch of money.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's not
what happens. There's no transparency there.
But the amount of money being made is still larger and larger and larger.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
I guess going back to your beginnings about CEO salaries, I guess I can assume
that it's going to the bottom line.
No, but just somebody's making money.
Yeah.
Or they wouldn't be in this at all.
Right.
Somebody's making money.
Yeah, so corporate America has figured out how to bring all of the money to a different spot to where it's making more sense to the shareholders, therefore paying more money to the CEOs. Wow, we've solved a lot of issues on this show. I'm not kidding. Dave. And then you got the internet and you got Instagram and all that other stuff, yeah. Right?
I'm just saying it would be cool to have a partner that was transparent and dare I say, you know, whatever the corporate version of vulnerable is, and we could move forward and be successful together.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard because you're such a talented and important person to our business. You know, you brought so much great product to television and moved so many careers forward that have helped, you know, populate other shows, you know.
Thank
and
you.
And it's important and it's important to be able to feel excited about the work that you're going to do. And unfortunately, when you look at it in terms of like, where do I find like the ultimate success here,
yeah,
you know, we're not Bob Iger can see where his $40 million is going to be showing up, and we can't.
You and I don't.
Yeah, no. We can't. I was talking to my boy the other day, and I said, you know, do something that will get you a residual payment. You know, do something. You know, when you think about internet stuff, when you think about someone who's going to download that game,
sure,
that you play,
sure,
they only had to make it once, and everyone sure. gets to well, download
yeah.
it.
Well, and the music industry has been destroyed.
Yeah,
right, destroyed. But to end on a positive note, you look at bands that you and I know, like Los Lobos, and I don't know how they're doing financially, but I remember 10 or 11 years ago having a conversation, and it's like they left a major label and then went to a smaller label. But when they went, you know, and I might get all the times wrong in terms of years and stuff, but when they left and went to a smaller label, you could go like, oh, bummer for them. But what I think they found out pretty quickly is the smaller label was not requiring them to sell hundreds of thousands of albums in order to make the same amount of money. The scale got all different. It's like, oh, come to this smaller label, and if you sell 10,000, you end up making maybe the same amount, and then you'll have to tour to augment and stuff like that. So like, there's a new life out there, and it's a life that is a little bit more bespoke and speaks to smaller audiences. I think you see a lot of writers, a lot of fiction writers, a lot of comic book writers have left like the major companies and gone to a place called Substack, and they're publishing their comics on Substack. And their scale is different, but they're making more money because they're owning their comic books.
Right.
So I think there's opportunities out there. But I do think that for anybody that dreams of like a broad audience that digs what you're doing and digs the stories you're telling, like, there's nothing like a big partner that's going to help elevate, and I hope that we get back to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I do too. And just to summarize, and I think just to let people know, if you're tuning in, I think the important thing about what we're talking about is, you know, the confusion about AI is not that AI is bad. It's that AI is going to reduce pay in a lot of areas for writers. And if the idea was, hey, let's all use AI and it doesn't change the pay for writers, that would be great. But the regulation on AI, which we were talking about before we started on the show, which is how do you regulate who's starring in these AI stories, what ethnicity these guys are. I mean, there's a lot of conversation about that. But the number one conversation is, if it's going to take away steps from writers, let's just make sure that the writers are getting paid the full amount, regardless of whether AI is helping write the shit or not. And right. I think that that's the key to the AI issue. And then we'll have to figure out how to regulate the whole thing and all that.
Yeah, I think technology is technology. And, you know, I think that what you need is a guarantee that our livelihood exists.
Yeah, I agree.
And right now, that's what we feel is on the line, is our livelihood.
It's already, like, look, the raises that you guys get, which I believe is around 3 to 5% every time anyway, which is probably not enough, by the way. But assuming that that's it, it shouldn't be taken away or reduced by AI. AI should enhance that, or we should be using it as a tool to help that. But there shouldn't be a reduction in any way, shape, or form.
Listen, I'm going to end on a not a negative note, but I'm going to end this way. I want to end this way because I know we all got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But like this, AI is a tool. Now, AI right now, I think, is not capable of writing a polished screenplay.
True.
But I bet you we're closer to having AI be able to analyze a story and give feedback on a story than we are in having a story made. So it would be interesting to me to hear from the studio and network execs that work with us, that give us notes every day, because like a lot of workers in the world, not even in show business, AI is going to affect people's jobs. And so I guess what I'm saying is, I wonder if the executives that give us notes every day think about the fact that what is their job like? Can they just load up all that we write and spit out the analysis? And what is their part now? So I think that we all kind of have to engage in this conversation about what kind of a tool is it, and how does it affect all of our jobs, right? AI will give the notes, and they'll just email them or something. But I mean, that's a funny thing to me, but I think it's like, that's a conversation you want to have, is like, how are we going to use this tool together? Yeah.
Well, I want to thank Russ Emanuel and Extreme Music for supporting the show and for letting us do this. We appreciate them, Extreme Music, for all your music needs. Right, David?
Yes, absolutely. And we miss Tony, by the way.
And we miss Tony.
Oh, Tony's not here.
I want to make sure that everyone supports the writers, the actors, Screen Actors Guild, the Writers Guild, in their quest for fair pay. And, you know, we're going to hope that this thing's over soon and that everyone stays friends and that we can go back to work. I mean, no one's going to do the work you do, no computer, no other person. So let's hope we can all get back to work making great product. Thank you for everything that you've done and everything you're going to do.
Thank
and thanks
you.
For talking to us, because I think this conversation was unique and specific and very important. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Really
thanks
appreciate
for
it. All right.
Thanks.
Bye.